When I was growing up, what are known as the history books of the Bible were my favorite texts. I loved the stories that we found in Judges and in Samuel and in Kings and in Chronicles, the battles, the monarchs, the excitement, the mayhem, the chaos. Not surprisingly, as a kid, I found all of this far more appealing than anything I was going to come across in Leviticus. As an adult, that's still the case. Now, Leviticus, which I will not preach on today, gets a bad rap because people think there are a whole bunch of rules in there and it's all boring. But those rules are important. Those commandments undergird the life of faith. And that life of faith finds expression in different ways. One of those ways is demonstrated in this passage from 2 Samuel. The story of the ark arriving in Jerusalem is really a moment of meaning-making for the people of Israel. Think in our own history of a seminal episode of when the national capital located in Washington, D.C. Our federal city wasn't fully built up, but it was a big deal when John Adams moved into the White House. There was symbolism in that moment. People knew something in the story of the nation was changing, and that was the case oh so long ago back in ancient Israel. The ark had been mobile. It had gone hither and yon. It had been captured by the Philistines. It had been retaken. It had stayed in people's homes. It had been in Shiloh. But it had never really had a proper home base. And now that was changing. David had established Jerusalem as his capital, and he was going to bring the ark there. Now, as some of you know from some of my prior preaching, scholars can spend lots of time coming up with all sorts of theories about why things were done. And sometimes we get the impression that maybe they're spending a little too much time talking to themselves, trying to find a deeper meaning. You know, maybe here David is engaged in some kind of political, ideological stunt. Maybe he's trying to shape people's opinions and impressions. Well, that strikes me as being a somewhat anachronistic reading of the text. Yes, even in ancient times, rulers wanted to tell stories in a way that were going to help people understand things in a particular fashion. But to suggest that David may have had spin doctors at work for him, I think is going a little too far. I read this text and I take it at face value. David is excited about bringing the ark to Jerusalem because he wants to have God present in this capital city. He wants the people to know that God is with them. Now, in the ancient world, kings made a big deal about being the emissaries of divine powers. They drew their legitimacy from that. And in a sense, they were using religion to buttress their position. But I think David was coming at it from the other direction. He wanted God's protection. He wanted God's support. And so he wanted to make this gesture of having the Ark of the Covenant in his capital. This was a big deal, and he was excited. We see what happens as the ark makes its way into Jerusalem. There's worship, there's singing, there's dancing. People are excited. Think about what it would have been like to see David dancing. Think about that. There was at least one person in Jerusalem who wasn't particularly pleased with this. That was Michal. As the text tells us, she was the daughter of Saul, and she was also David's wife. Now, the relationship between the house of David and the house of Saul could make a great plot line in Game of Thrones. There is a lot of bad blood here. It's complicated. There is the rivalry between Saul and David. There is the doomed friendship of David and Jonathan. And then there's this marriage. And Michal seems to think, no, that's not the way a king is supposed to behave. In the verses that follow this morning's lesson, David disagrees. And he makes clear that the people want to see the joy and the enthusiasm. Long ago when I lived in Boston, I worshipped at Old South Church in Copley Square. And back in the 1950s and 1960s, this was the classic example of a big downtown congregation. Things were very, very formal. The ushers, all of whom were men, wore mourning coats. Okay. So it was a big deal during the 1960s when someone did something in worship that involved young people dancing in the aisles. And there was a picture of this that appeared in Life magazine. And there were people in the congregation who were aghast. But the church didn't come to an end. And indeed, this image is now a treasured part of that congregation's story. What was true for David 2,500 years ago, or even longer, I should say, 3,000 years ago, is true for us today. And that is, we should be willing to come before God with abandon. To let it rip. To let loose. To be excited. Think about what happens during this procession. We have worship. We have celebration. We have giving. It all comes together. And while David may not have portrayed it this way, this was one giant act of stewardship. With joy, he was giving of what he had to God. He was celebrating God's gifts to him. By singing and dancing and then sharing with the people. So the question I have for us to consider this day is, what would it take to get us to dance? What would it take to get us to sing with joy? Now, I know some of you are getting really scared right now. So we'll leave it metaphorical for now. But what is it that's going to float your boat, to get you excited? I think each of us is called to meditate on this and pray on this during this season of stewardship as we contemplate our pledges and our commitments of time and the committees on which we want to serve and the fellowships in which we're going to participate. And I know there are people in this church who are already dancing and singing in the way they participate in our common life. Stewardship in this congregation makes a tremendous difference. And I say that every week, but I just want you to consider some of the ways in which we touch the community. I will not make reference to every single activity in this church. It would take too long. And by omitting something, I do not mean to communicate it is not important. But let us consider for a moment music. Now, Henry does a wonderful job for us, playing the organ and the piano and leading the choir. But if we don't have people who want to sing, whether in the choir or the congregation, it doesn't matter. So we have people who are giving of themselves on Sunday mornings. And we have others who come and support our concert series. So we can share the gift of this space with its wonderful acoustics with our friends in the Upper Valley. Or think about the community dinner that we do here once a month. One of the things that has really impressed me over the years is the number of children who are participating in this ministry. We have kids who come and serve, and they are learning that this is what you do as a Christian. You feed your neighbors. That is an act of stewardship. Twice a month, you can come here on a weekday and you can see the WIC clinic set up in our parish hall. And people are coming here and they are getting vitally needed advice and health care and support. And that is a ministry of our church because we have the space to share. Not only with WIC, but with recovery groups and the Scouts. And the CPR training program, and so many other things that happen here, and that are able to happen here because we care for this building. I know that you all can come up with many more examples to add to the list. And I hope you'll do that, and you'll think about it. And you'll be excited and enthused. And you'll be inspired in your stewardship. Yes, the budget is important. I'm not going to say it's not. But the church is so much more than the money. We are, after all, a congregational church. We're all ministers here. I just get to wear the costume on Sunday. But each and every person here is a minister and a pastor. And so each person here is called to share his or her gifts. And everybody here has a gift. So on this Stewardship Sunday, as I invite everybody to sing to the Lord, I ask each person here to think about his or her call into ministry, to think about what it is that excites you about your participation in a community of faith, in this community of faith, and then to give thanks to God for that enthusiasm, and to respond joyfully.